chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Saroma Doc Love on the show today. Doc is a former Navy Command Master Chief and founder of the Be the Light Foundation. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So, Saroma, Doc, as you're affectionately called,
I am looking
so forward to this time with you today. You and I met recently, not too long ago. Steve Wilt had connected us and said the two of you need to meet. And so I know that what you have to say today is just going to be so helpful to our listeners, and I'm excited for them to hear your story. But I have to ask you this. So, you know, you're affectionately known as Doc, Doc Love. Where did Doc come from? I never asked you that question.
Well, before I get into that, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me. I really, really do appreciate it. It's things like this that really get the word out on that whole side of life that we don't talk about very much, and that's the side of life of hope and love and happiness. And I also want to say thank you to Steve. Steve has been a tremendous supporter of Beat Alive, both financially through his bank and logistically. And I mean, the first time I met Steve, he probably gave me 25 contacts in like 15 minutes. So he has been a fantastic person. But the answer to your question is, I believe it was a group called KISS, had a song, so they call me Dr. Love.
And yes.
When I joined the Navy in 1985, when I reported to my first command in 86, the people on the ship had no idea how to say my first name. They couldn't do Saroma. So they said, well, we'll just call you Doc, and for the song, because my last name's Love. So, and that's where that came from.
Oh, I love that.
The rest of my life. I mean, wow, that was 35 years ago, and it's just
there. Yeah. So how many people in your life really call you Saroma? Not many, probably, right?
A handful, yes. Just a hand. It's actually the people who call me Saroma, I know I probably just met them.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So that's, you are good. Officially off the hook. You are now a DOC member.
I'm a DOC member. I love it. Well, I know you've already talked about being in the military, but you did grow up as a military kid too,
absolutely,
right? Your dad was a 24-year veteran of the Navy.
My dad was a 24-year veteran. My oldest brother went to West Point. My second oldest brother did 24 years in the Air Force. My next brother did 8 years in the Air Force. And as you can tell, I did not join the Air Force. And I did 30 years in the Navy, and my son just completed 16 in the Navy.
Oh, my goodness. See, I didn't know that about your son. Wow, what a legacy. What a legacy. Well, my dad was a Marine. My father-in-law was a sergeant in the Army. Greg's uncle was a Green Beret. I mean, we kind of come from that, but we did not follow in their footsteps to go into the military. But I have such a love for our men and women.
Well, thank you very much.
So thank you for your service, Doc.
And thank you. And I want to say thank you to you, because I was mentioning it to a young lady the other day. She had worked with veterans for over 20 years. And she said, but I never served. I said, are you kidding? I said, you work with veterans for over 20 years. You served. That's a career. You know, I went to Iraq, I was responsible for over 500 people. But what was interesting is 250 were uniformed and 250 were civilian. So service comes in many forms. It really does. And it's a small world. So
it is a small world. It is a small world. Well, I know you had a wonderful upbringing. Wonderful upbringing. You talk about very strong character. I love this about your dad. You said your dad was about the we against the world.
Always.
He was about
family.
Yes. You grew up with that instilled in you. How
well, you really had no choice. When your father's in the military and you know you're going to move every 4 years, the only thing that remains consistent is your family. So my father, and plus, there were no girls in my family with the exception of my mom. So, you got four strong-headed alpha males plus my dad raising up in a family. So my father was extremely animate about family and togetherness and supporting each other. For example, every Christmas, he made sure we got a board game, and that forced us to play together.
I love that.
Yeah. And so I come from a very, very strong, fundamentally based family. One of the things my father used to always tell us is, since I have the freedom to speak freely on this, he was very adamant if he caught you exercising any form of discrimination. His philosophy is don't discriminate, but don't assume somebody else is not going to discriminate against you. So because of that basic philosophy, I've actually been able to grow up in the sense of measuring, for use of a better word, even though I'm not God, measuring people on a basis of character, not on a basis of their skin color. And when you measure people based on their character, you realize that skin color has nothing to do with it. Character expands across the board, no matter who you are.
Yes. Every ethnicity, every socioeconomic status. I mean, really, it does. What a wonderful foundation.
Thank you.
That your life was built on, Doc. I absolutely love that. And I'm just thinking to myself as you're talking, God bless your mom. She's a saint.
It goes by that I don't think about that. That is true. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Four big, strong, brawly, rowdy boys, probably. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's talk about, because you've already talked about it, joining the Navy in 1985. You rose quickly through the ranks, mm-hmm. and this is where that strong foundation, I think, came into play. Because you said it's through hard work, faith, and the ability to read people. So your work ethic and your faith were what really catapulted you, Doc.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
And you were actually, you reached the rank of Command Master Chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was an interesting 30-year adventure. If you're not grounded, and that's one of my five pillars, if you're not grounded to something, if you're not grounded to something, you're going to blow in the wind. So I always had the family, not necessarily the physical connection to the family because we were all over the place, but the family grounding and philosophy and faith and love to carry me through. I was actually asked a few times when I was in the military, how come you're not upset about something? And I was like, why should I be? Because in the big picture, it really doesn't matter. In the big picture, it doesn't have an impact on anybody else. It's just, person X blowing off some steam, let them have their day. The other thing that the military taught you, which I think society can kind of take a chapter from, is when you're out in the water on a ship and you're with 200, 250 people, you got to figure out a way to get along. You can't go home at 4 o'clock every day. You can't put that person in your room here. So you suddenly realize that the things that matter really don't matter, because you have to face the person that you may be upset with today as the person you have to have dinner with tomorrow. So you really learn how to be, you really learn humility and how to be considerate of the other person's feelings. And you really get that one team, one fight mentality in you. And you begin to really actively seek hard for commonalities versus differences.
Right.
And that is huge. When you almost to the point, I've actually been on some deployments where there was part of you that was a little reluctant to get back home, because then you knew you were faced with the 9-to-5 and a whole different personality type at that shore station, as opposed to the camaraderie you developed with the 200 people that you were out with. So.
Oh, wow. There's so much packed in there. One of my questions was going to be, tell me, because I mean, obviously I didn't serve, but I grew up with that. You know, that served as a Marine. And you often hear that the military is the best leadership academy in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, there's no better leadership program than my dad always used to say that the military would turn a boy into a man quicker than anybody.
And, you know, not only does it turn a boy into a man, it is an excellent I told you so. All those things that you told your teenage son or daughter who you thought didn't hear you, they quickly realize that this is reality. This is not something that your parents were just saying to waste oxygen. And so it's when that light bulb goes on, it's really interesting. Like, oh, I don't even have to cover that. Your parents told you that. I just had to remind you. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It will turn a boy into a man or a girl into a woman. No question.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, okay. So let's do a deeper dive in some of the leadership lessons. What about, you know, because leaders, one of the key tenets of a leader, Doc, as you know, is it's the decisions.
Yes.
I don't know. I haven't, I know I've read that stat in the past, but I want to say 40,000 decisions a day. I don't know exactly what it is. And for a leader, it's even more than that, right? Mm-hmm. So tell me about the process of decision making. Here's another funny one. And our team would remember this, but we had a lieutenant colonel that was doing some consulting for us for a while. And I'll never forget him saying, he said, you know, in the military, it's yes, sir, no, sir, no excuse, sir.
Yes, yes.
No excuses. Yes. You know, there's those little idioms that, you know, that come out that you won't forget. But tell me about the process of decision making, because, you know, how did the military teach you how to make decisions?
Well, the military does an outstanding job, but it's an inverse relationship. So when you're lower in rank, there's not much room for decision making. It's yes, sir, no, sir, do it. You know? But through that process, you learn the system, you learn the idiosyncrasies, things of that nature. But as you move up, the decisions that you have to make become greater, and the sense of self becomes less. You realize that you don't matter. It's not about you. It's about the 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people, 200 people. Every decision you make has got to be a horizontal decision, in the sense that it's got to cover everyone. It's got to be fair to everyone. And every decision, so you need humility on the front. Humility in the front, you don't matter. Humility on the back, you may have done something wrong. So consulting the people around you, no matter how smart you are individually, you're never as smart as 10 other people combined. So you consult the people around you, take the best of the best. I remember Ronald Reagan in his autobiography. He talked about how he would take Caspar Weinberger and I think George Shultz, I think he was, and he would let them fight because they never agreed on anything. And then he would take the best of both of them, put a speech together, and he looked like a genius. And he, this was his words, not mine. He never came up with the ideas that they could come up together. So he would just pose the question. It's like, you know, it's kind of like throwing a bone in the middle of dogs and let them go at it. He would just pose the question and then let them figure it out. So you've got to be humble on the front. You got to be humble during the decision-making process. And you got to be humble on the back end. And you've got to be honest in a sense of you've got to be willing to deal with the blowback. There's going to be always any decision you make, there's going to be some blowback. You've got to be willing to deal with that blowback. You know, and that applies both in the military, in any leadership role, in either leadership role. You've got to be able to do, if you can't handle the blowback, then you have no business being a leader.
Yeah, for sure. Because you're going to have people that don't agree. So how do you move through that gracefully, diplomatically, right? Yes. So, oh my goodness. I think you told me this, Doc, or maybe I read it somewhere, but the average age of a leader in the military is about 27, you know, so it's very early on, you know, that you may have, you know, you may have a platoon of people that you're overseeing. So amazing. We could probably spend a whole podcast on that, but I want to get in before we move into our break here. I want to get into the psychology of sports. I want to talk, because I remember talking to you about this, and I know that you've coached soccer. You've coached soccer. You were also, I think, a level 2 certified trainer for CrossFit. I told you I did CrossFit. Shout out to Justin McPherson. Shout out to Justin. Boy, you know that you've worked out you know, when you do CrossFit.
Justin's a great guy.
He is. Tell me about the psychology of sports, because you and I had a whole discussion about youth soccer, and it wasn't just about learning the skills of soccer. You feel like it teaches so much more than that.
Absolutely. And it's funny you should mention that, because just yesterday I was watching the Little League is having their regional semifinals and finals right now. It's all over ESPN. And I watched that because one of the greatest things you like to watch is the interaction between the players and the coaches, how the kids all shut up this every time the coach says something, how the coach is very positive, very encouraging, very uplifting. One of the things that was I found funny yesterday was the coach walked up to his batter and said, "Calm down, at least you're not in school," which I thought was hilarious, you know, and the kid got a big old smile on his face, you know. So one of the things about bringing people together is getting people all on the same page and getting people to understand and accept that there's a single mission, not an individual mission. The most successful teams that I've seen, especially in soccer, because it's 11 people moving as a unit, or baseball where there's 9 people moving as a unit, the most successful, or even in basketball, whatever sport you are, 11 people in football, what you're really looking for is all of them to buy into one mission, to one goal, to one objective, to put the group ahead of themselves. To make the sacrifices, and in youth sports, sacrifices are really not that extreme, but to make the sacrifices that it takes to really meet the end game, to really meet the end mission. So as a coach, your job is, I mean, teaching fundamentals, teaching the basics. You can do that in any sport, at any time, anywhere. But a really successful coach will get the kids or get the players' heads around a single goal, a single mission, and let them understand that the sacrifices they make are for a greater good. That is huge. Be the Light is a mission, which we'll get into later, but that is huge. If you can do that with your team, if you can do that, if your team, if your players believe in you and you believe in your players, success is almost guaranteed. It's almost guaranteed. I went to a Cardinals game the other day and I saw something in the Cardinals that I hadn't seen in a few seasons. And that was a single-minded mission, a single goal. And they are really coming together as a team, whereby before they just had nine players on the field. They are really coming together as a team and as a mission. And you can really see that philosophy. And that's what makes a successful coach.
Sure. You can see it, Doc, and you can feel it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
When they are acting as a unit, right, with a single mission. Well, I love it. And we could keep talking about this, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Doc Love on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Doc Love. So, Doc, I want to move into another part of your story. You met your wife, Kirsten. She was military as well, right? Mm-hmm. She was in the military. It was a beautiful love story. It was love at first sight for you. You knew she was the one. You guys got married in 2011, moved to Missouri in 2012. But here's what I want to talk about. In 2015, you guys had what I call a radical life interruption for both of you. Can you tell the listeners that story?
So let's go back a little bit before 2015. In 2011, Kirsten was diagnosed with ocular melanoma, which is extremely rare for a person in their 20s. Usually it's for people who spend copious amounts of time in the sun. She did not. So she had the chemotherapy and everything, and it was actually pretty fascinating the way they do it. So she came out of that, and she was given the R remission. So 3 years later, we were going for a routine follow-up in 2015. And they said, well, she did a CAT scan, and they said, well, your eye is fine, but we're finding little spots on your liver. So she went through a biopsy, found out that it was cancer, went through a one-year trial study down in Florida, did not improve, did not worsen, had a couple of surgeries to try to remove the cancer, but it just became too plentiful. During this time in 2015, I was diagnosed with bladder cancer. So we're running cancer side by side, parallel here. I am in complete and utter denial. Okay. So I retire in 2015 from the military, and my retirement gift was the bladder cancer, to be honest with you. I start chemotherapy, very intrusive chemotherapy. Let's leave it at that. And it works, but then the amount of time that it works starts getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So finally, it was suggested to me that I have my bladder removed. So September of 2020, I had my first bladder surgery, one of three. During this time, Kirsten is going downhill, to say the least, losing her hair, things of that nature. In December of 2020, I had my second surgery, and Kirsten is getting progressively worse. And then 1 week after Kirsten passed away, February 13th of 2021, I had my third surgery. So that was extremely difficult. But what I came to the conclusion of, in spite of all the stuff that we went through with her two kids, my two stepkids, which I loved dearly, what we realized is it wasn't the appointment at Siteman that was hurting us. It was the multiple trips to Siteman that was hurting us. half a tank of gas a week per vehicle. Sometimes Kirsten had to go twice a week. Sometimes I had to go twice a week. When I didn't have to go to Siteman, I had to go to a doctor's office off of Olive. I live in O'Fallon, so Missouri. The costs started greatly building up. And even if you have good insurance like we did, we have TRICARE, you know that only takes care of what's inside of the hospital. It does not take care of what's outside of the hospital. And it's not the hospital's responsibility to take care of that. That's not their job. Their job is to make sure the doctor's on time, the medicine is there, and everything else. It is not their responsibility to worry about how you're going to get there and back. I had a very brief grief period, but I remember Kirsten telling me, almost what I now know to be her deathbed, she told me to, if you ever have an opportunity, to make sure you give back. And if you give back, don't do it by just taking her insurance money and giving it to a foundation or something. Her thing was, you got to get out there, as we say in the military, boots on ground, and you got to really make a difference. So I kept that promise from her, because Kirsten was incredible, and we can talk 3 hours on her. And the other thing I wanted to do is I needed to find a way to make a difference that wasn't covered by something else. So I started the Be the Light Foundation, because Kirsten would do a Friday message, which I started doing. And at the end of it, she would say, above all, be the light in somebody's life. Be the light, be the ripple in someone's life. So that's where the Be the Light Foundation came from. So if you look at my logo, you'll see it's the sun, but you also see there's water. That's where the ripple comes from. Just make a difference in someone's life.
I love that. And that's what you're doing. That's what you're doing. Be the Light. And I want you to tell our listeners, you know, more about that and how they can get involved. But Doc, and I know, I mean, Kirsten just passed away in February 2021. I mean, we personally at Technology Partners have some people right now that are dealing with a lot of grief. And I know you are still grieving yourself. Mm-hmm. But can you tell our listeners just a few things that you've learned about grief? And I mean, obviously, you're still learning, right? But if there's someone out there that's dealing with something like this, can you share a little bit of wisdom with them?
Absolutely. First of all, that question actually helps, because talking about it helps. A lot of people feel guilty about talking about grief. You need to shout grief to the highest mountain, because it allows you not only to relieve yourself, but it also allows you to get feedback from people. But the feedback, as you mentioned earlier, the feedback needs to come from people who know what you're talking about, who've experienced it. We call it the club. Are you in the club? Do you know what it feels like to lose a loved one, a coworker, a spouse, a close relative, things of that nature? The other thing about grief is get help. Get help. We are not programmed to handle grief. I know it looks great on a Hollywood movie when a person passed away and the other person just cries one tear and then moves on. I know it looks great, but we are not programmed. Pain is pain. And do not deny yourself actually the honor of grieving. One of the things I've learned is the amount you grieve is in direct proportion to how much you love the person that you lost. So you cannot love a person and not grieve. It's impossible. Grieve, but grieve functionally. Turn that grief into a weapon. Turn that grief into a charge. I get a lot of feedback from people who say they lost someone to cancer, so now their mission is to make sure it doesn't happen again. So that's pretty much a good way to put it. It's okay to grieve. Get help, because there are steps to grief. Talk to people who understand your grief. Just because the person's biologically associated with you does not mean they understand your grief.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And take both as a supervisor and as a worker, everybody in the pipeline needs to have an understanding of grief. They need to understand, like Major League Baseball now has bereavement leave. Okay, well, they didn't always have that. They need to understand that if you don't do these steps to grief, the ramifications are endless. I've known people who because they never took the steps to grieving, 10 years later, they're still at stage one of grief because they spent all that time in denial. I'll be honest with you. It's the only time I ever ugly cried. So, you know, it is a process, but probably the biggest thing is don't try to be stronger than the process and don't try to be stronger than you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the words of wisdom, and you're living it, Doc.
Yes.
And so,
yes.
Our prayers continue with you as well. But let's talk about Be the Light a little bit more. And you heard Kirsten say, and you even listened to her last Friday message, and it said, be the light, you know, yes. Be the light, the difference, right? So, yes. So tell me again what you're doing with Be the Light and how can our listeners get involved in that?
We are a nonprofit organization, 501c3, that deals strictly with the out-of-pocket cost of cancer care. We do know we give people ideas such as transportation. We'll pay for transportation. We'll pay for fuel. We'll pay for lodging. But those are just ideas. We will basically, if you are dealing with the out-of-pocket cost of cancer care and you need help, we are there to help. We will send you an application. It's a very simple application. We just need some information so we know who to send the check to be honest with you. And you send that application back. We verify we do not violate your HIPAA. We do not violate your privacy. We just verify. Probably the biggest thing we verify is addresses, because there are some towns out there I have never heard of. And we will send you a care package with an approximate value of $250. The level of the check that we send you is strictly based on how much money is in our account. So we are give, get. I am the founder, but I do not take a salary from Be the Light. I do not take one penny from Be the Light. 100% of the donations to Be the Light goes to helping people. So currently, we're about $75,000 in donations we've given to help people across the country. We are over 140 families. We've sent out over 150 care packages. Our latest thing is, which I found out just simply by doing this, is when a woman has breast cancer and she has a mastectomy, that first mastectomy bra is not covered by insurance. I was outraged. I was amazed by that. So now if a person has a mastectomy and has to get that first mastectomy bra, we will reimburse up to $75 for that first bra. All you got to do is snap a photo of the receipt, email it to Ceromi, CeromaLove at BeTheLightAndDarkness.com, and give me an address to send the check. That's all you got to do, and we will reimburse you for that. So that is what we're doing. We are trying to push a movement to help people.
Yeah.
So, and with God's grace, we're rolling.
You are. I'm so proud of you. I'm so grateful for what you're doing. And just you're honoring Kirsten in doing it, Doc. And
absolutely.
So I
appreciate absolutely.
That. So tell me, Doc, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
The something extra? Humility. Humility. Don't let your ego be your guide. Mm-hmm. Humility, I can't stress that enough. Humility and faith. You've got to have faith in something bigger than you, and you've got to have humility. A good leader will have both of those. A leader without humility is a very dangerous person, because that means they're only thinking about themselves and for themselves and not for the greater good.
Could not agree more. I love it. Well, Doc, I cannot thank you enough. Thank you so much for making the time today to be on the show.
And thank you. I just want to mention something real quick. On August 21st at 360 Lakeside, it's the beautiful park in St. Peter's, we are doing a bike-a-thon. You can go on our website, or you can go on the actual event site. The easiest way to get to is go to our website, betalightanddarkness.com. Click on the bike-a-thon tab, and it'll take you to the link for the bike-a-thon. You can sign up as a rider. You can sign up as a pleasure, which is really picking up because now it's becoming a little friendly competition. Or you can sign up as, you can just donate to Be the Light for the bike-a-thon. I'm really looking forward. We are very excited. And I encourage people, if you're looking for something to do, if you're looking for somebody to something to follow, if you're looking for something to make a difference, go to our website, betalightanddarkness.com, and we will be more than happy to celebrate Be the Light with you. If you send me your address, and even if you're not a cancer sufferer, I will put a package together and I will send it to you with business cards, leaflets, whatever you need to put Be the Light out there and really get your friends the help that they need.
That's awesome. All right, Doc. Well, thank you so much. I hope you have lots of people reaching out to you. So thank you again for being on the show, and I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.